Episode number 187 with Derek Tenbush. Welcome to the Heads of Poker podcast. This is Steve Barton.
This is Mike.
There we go. And up here with Derek and Mike. How the hell are you guys?
I thought we'd let the superstar talk first, but
I wasn't ready. I wasn't prepared.
I was going to thank KB for coming on, Steve, but doesn't he just, before his Twitch stream starts, just kind of walk around the house in his underwear, stopping to play video games?
Pretty much.
We're not interrupting anything. Let's be honest.
No, we robbed some underwear time from KB, but that's about it, I think.
Or sleep time, one of the two. Usually I'm waking up right around now, but I get up early just for you guys.
Oh, okay. I apologize. Thank you, then.
Well, thank you, sir. We appreciate it.
No problem. Anytime.
How's Vegas treating you? How are you liking it out there?
Vegas has been good. It's weird because, I don't know, like, when I came out here, everybody was like, oh, you're going to play so much live poker. It's going to be great. Love all these tournaments, blah, blah, blah. I think I've played, not counting the World Series, I think I've played two live tournaments.
Really?
In the time I've lived here. So I'm literally sitting on my computer more than I did before I moved here. It's not what people probably envisioned for somebody moving to Vegas. We don't really go outside very much because it's 110 degrees. And
yeah, if even to go a step back, like rather than, although it seems maybe a dumb question since you're a poker player, but not like, how's Vegas? Why Vegas?
Yeah.
So if people asked you that because you are an online guy and Vegas is not. I'll just let you answer the question.
Yeah. So basically, it all started because my wife and I wanted to sell our house. My son had gone to college. She didn't want to clean a house that was built for more people when there's only two of us and we're wasting all this space. So she's like, I want to sell the house. And I said, okay, well, I'm cool with that. The question is, are we selling the house and buying something here in North Carolina or back there in North Carolina, or are we selling the house and moving somewhere? And she goes, I don't know. What do you want to do? And so we kind of started talking about places to move, which is basically the exact same thing we did when we went to North Carolina. We had never been to Raleigh. We had no reason to move there. We just did. So we started kind of doing the same thing, like saying, okay, well, where can we go? And we don't like cold. So that basically eliminates half the country. And we don't like the deep South. So we got about five states to choose from. And my wife was like, well, would Vegas be good, like from a business standpoint for TPE and poker and all that stuff? And I said, yeah, I mean, it would be good, but it's not at all necessary. Like I'm not a live guy and I can play online here. And she goes, well, but it would be like, she didn't use these words, but basically asked, would it be like moderately plus EV? Like, and as you can imagine, not anything in those terms. But I said, yeah, I guess it would. She goes, all right, Vegas it is. So
that's how you heard it.
There wasn't like a big plan. Like it wasn't, a lot of people thought it was because of the merging of the three legalized markets, but it really had nothing to do with that. In fact, that didn't even dawn on me until about 2 weeks after we decided to move. I was like, oh, I'll be able to plan WSOP.com now. So we just kind of rolled out here as a little bit of an experiment, and it's been a lot of fun. But I don't know. I'm not sure if I've even talked to you guys about this, but most people in my stream and stuff know we're actually going back to North Carolina.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. So weird sort of chain of events. Basically got a really good opportunity to go back and be involved in a distillery. Mm-hmm. And you guys know how much I like my whiskey.
Right up your alley.
Yeah. So I was like, you know what? This seems like a really good opportunity, probably too good to pass up. We hadn't bought anything here yet. We actually hadn't made an offer on a house, but they turned us down. So we were like, maybe it was sort of fate that we didn't buy a house. So now we're actually building a house back where we came from. We'll be going back sometime around like late October, early November, probably.
Okay. Why don't you tell us the real story? your wife slapped you across the head and said, you know, I don't like it out here. We're going back.
I went busto.
And you whimpered and agreed to it.
Yeah, I will say that I don't think she's been as big of a fan of Vegas as I have, but that was definitely not the motivating factor. In fact, we actually started looking at different places to go to. We started looking at like Austin, Texas, Portland, Oregon, just kind of like a different change of pace. But like I said, then this opportunity came up. We're like, okay, this seems like a good thing to do.
Right on. What are you going to be doing? Marketing for him, or?
Yeah. Yep. Okay. I'll be handling all the marketing, PR, website stuff. Basically what I was doing for the brewery before I came here. I won't be involved with the brewery anymore, but pretty excited to learn like a whole new industry.
Yeah.
It's kind of a cool little experiment. So we'll see how it goes.
Cool. Cool. Awesome.
So do you feel, what are your thoughts now? You're like, kind of like, oh my God, what a waste of time to come out here. Or are you just like, well, it's fun, new experience, and you know.
Yeah, it was basically just a cool adventure. I mean, I basically come out here every summer anyway. So the first 2 months is just kind of what I would have done regardless. And I kind of was joking with my wife. I'm like, let's just pretend it was a really fun 8 month long vacation, which is basically what it turned out to be. We've been like, it's been really fun to sort of just explore a new, because every time I come here, I mean, you guys know how it is. You come, you rent a house or a hotel room, and you basically see the inside of your room and the inside of a poker room. And that's really all you ever do. Maybe you get out to like Top Golf, or maybe you go golfing one day, or you go maybe once you go for a hike or something. Yeah. But for the most part, you just never leave the casino. So this has been a lot different because we've been hitting the lake, we've been going up in the mountains, we've been hiking out in the desert.
Okay.
Just kind of exploring different places, different things to do. So like I have a new appreciation actually for the Vegas area. Turns out it's actually more than gambling, which is weird.
Yeah,
it is. And that $10,000 you spent on moving expenses back and forth, it's like that's what you lose on ACR in a month anyways. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, my shark scope graph is way worse than my life graph, so it's okay. And really, the funny thing is we really didn't spend very much because we basically sold, gave away, or donated everything we owned. With the exception of like, you know, some like pictures and my guitars, like a few important things that are sitting in a storage unit back in Raleigh. Mm-hmm. And then we basically just loaded up two cars and drove out here. So it was,
okay.
It was gas money and like
your lucky chair,
a few hotels. Yeah. And my chair, like, and, I mean, we took two cars.
I've seen it on your Twitch stream.
Yeah. Basically everything we own fit in my Jeep because my wife's car was the three dogs. So like everything we own in this house that we're in right now fits in my Jeep Wrangler.
Wow. Okay. So, so you are complete hippies that can just go at a drop of a dime. That's cool.
Yeah. I kind of was living the Carlos life for a little while. That's the way I looked at it. I was just like, oh, I don't own anything. I'm just in this car driving across the country. This is cool.
Kind of liberating, huh?
Yeah, I think I tweeted or posted on Facebook or something at some point about how I never realized how freeing it would feel to own nothing.
Yeah.
Especially once the old, you know, our old house sold, then we really owned nothing. And I was just like, wow, this is so cool. So like when we go to leave here, I mean, from the minute we start packing to the minute we're like in our cars driving, it probably will be like 15, 20 minutes.
Like,
I mean, I'm staring at what I own and it's basically all on my desk. So it should be, it'll be cool. I'm looking forward to the next chapter, whatever it might bring.
That's cool. I met a guy last weekend. I went wine tasting and I've met him before once in Thailand. And ironically, right after we record this, I'm going down to Mexico with him. He's super into, just a real smart dude when it comes to finances. And he really wants to learn the stock market game. He knows more than I do about it. So I'm learning from him, but he found a guy that teaches it locally here in Santa Barbara, just about half an hour from me. And it's an expensive class. It's one weekend. It's 5K. Mm-hmm. But this guy is basically a day trader. I talked with him on the phone for an hour and it sounds so similar to poker. Pattern recognition, like seeing the trends, watching the graphs, like knowing when to, even if the stock is falling, knowing the points, when to sell and then when to buy, because there's going to be little uptakes, you know, little ticks going up on the way down, you know?
Right.
And that's a game that I've always wanted to learn and master. And I think this might be just enough to get me to do it at, Are you much into that, KB? Do you have like a bunch of stable stocks or?
Not really. My wife and I have this really weird method of investing. So we obviously have we have 401ks, IRAs, like all the boring mutual fund stuff and whatnot. The only stocks we've ever bought there might be some exceptions, but pretty much the only stocks we've ever bought are things that we like used and we're like, wow, this is really cool. So like, you know, we bought like eBay kind of early on, although I will say we didn't hold on to it nearly long enough to make as much as we could have. We bought Netflix. We bought Sirius Satellite Radio. A couple others like that. And that's all we know. That's all I know about investing. It's the same way I buy Bitcoin. I'm just like, or any cryptocurrency. I'm just like, folding coin? That sounds cool. Give me a few of those. Yeah. And luckily, we have actually done pretty well on some things, but it's really just been a combination of luck and the fact that the whole market has just been going up for like 10 years. So it's been relatively easy.
Yeah.
But I've never day traded. I've never like, I don't think I've ever bought a stock and sold it within a couple of years. Like I've always just held on to stuff.
That's what I do. And this guy, he basically, he says you kind of have to master the day trading stuff before you can get into what he calls swing trading, which is, you know, you kind of buy something and then you set your watch for a month and a half and then check on it again and then watch it for a week or so and then find the right time, you know? Mm-hmm. He said he hasn't been able to teach anyone like swing trading right off the bat. You kind of got to master the day trading first. And so basically my thought with this is, how much of this is going to cut into my poker time? I think it could be a lot more lucrative than poker. You know, it's just another game you have to learn.
Yeah, I also assume it's probably not quite as much of a, well, maybe not, I was going to say it's not as much of a time commitment. It could even be more of a time commitment in terms of like, I guess, research time and things like that. But it's not like when you sit down, you are committed to a 10-hour session, you know, like your tournaments or something. So, or at least you hope that it turns into a 10-hour session.
Yeah.
assume it's something where you can kind of be like, okay, I'm just gonna find one thing to trade today, and you can spend a couple hours doing it and be done. But I don't know because I'm pretty clueless on that stuff.
He said he watches only 12 stocks, and he says, you know, he just looks for the patterns in those stocks, and those are the ones that he trades during the day. But you know, if you wanted to only watch three, then it's less of a time commitment, but it's going to take you longer to learn. You know, it's like anything else. Can you devote 5 hours to poker a week, or can you devote 25? Same thing. But it's, I think I'm going to do it. I'm going to take it with my buddy. And I think it'll be fun.
Nice. You'll have to let me know how it goes.
Yeah. I'm excited. I've made some money in the stocks, but I think like you, KB, I don't really have any kind of system. I'm just like, oh, this guy told me about advance for micro devices, and the trend for the last 2 years is it's been going up. So I'll just throw a grand into there, and well, it's still going up. Okay, I guess that was good.
Pretty funny. Yeah, that's pretty much the story of my. I mean, it's not completely unlike the way I approach poker. You would think that a guy who is an owner of a training site would spend way more time like studying, but I pretty much just like hit the register button and hope for the best.
Maybe this is going to be the one. Click.
Yeah, I think this looks like a winner.
Yes. But well, how's TPE going? I love that series that Big Dog just put out.
Yeah, TPE has been really good. Added a new. Well, probably since last time I was on with you, maybe we've added two pros because. Well, I don't know. We've added Assassinato fairly recently, but I might have been out with you since then.
Yeah.
And then we added Jason Smith, who's Snost and Lost on Twitch. He's been a really cool addition.
His first series. He's good.
Yeah, I like him a lot. He's very – I like the way he keeps things pretty simple, which I guess maybe isn't for everybody, but for a guy like me who's not like a huge math nerd or anything.
That's right up Steve's alley, simple.
Yes, exactly. So it's been good. We just rolled out a new podcast as well, and we hope to hopefully do more of those. We have a solid plan in place that should involve way more podcasts coming up. So
good.
I've said that several times in the past, but I think this one is an actual winning plan. So,
well, you know what, bro, I've been meaning to talk to you about this. If you want to like put out a regular one, cause I've had a lot of people contact me and they're like, you know, I love TPE, but they just got to throw out some podcasts. Like we need some audio content to go with this. And I'm like, you're right. And
yeah.
To be honest, you guys were one of the main reasons I started my podcast, and here we are 187 episodes later. And if you want to, I'd be happy to jump on with you. You know, we don't have to do a weekly thing, but once every 2 weeks or something, we can schedule it. And
The world doesn't have enough Barton already.
Not enough. No, no.
I mean, come on, Steve. There's never a weekly podcast here. You know what I mean? you're just the keg of podcasts that never ends here. But I should prepare for this because I don't know enough about it. At some point, I want to talk about KB back in the day, his musical career.
Ooh,
I got a little bit from that Twitch though. Can we?
Oh yeah.
I don't know. Can we talk about? I either want to talk about the musical career or your hot wife, but it occurred to me they probably are both the same because
they are related.
You didn't meet her while like you were drunk in a bar. She probably was like heard about. Oh, musician.
I wish that was true, but we actually met when I was like, gosh, how old was I? 15, I think.
Oh, okay.
And I was not. I actually did play guitar at the time, and I was sort of playing in like a little high school band, but it was not I was not cool
playing you were the rock star
at that point. But what's even more impressive is that she stuck with me through the band days. So
okay.
Bless her for that.
She likes lame asses. I thought this was a more interesting story.
Nope, not really.
But how about you didn't have just your regular bar band though? You guys had a following and you were, I don't know, on the close to making it, or can you get into that? Your main band and how that came to be?
For sure. Yes. I was in a band back in college called Suicide Circus that actually kind of did okay on like a regional level. But then I left, when I finished college, I left Michigan to move to Los Angeles to actually get into the business side of the music industry. And then two of the guys from my old band moved out there as well. And we kind of just started getting together to write songs, basically. We had no real intention of like forming a band or performing or anything like that. We were basically just my guitar player had some recording experience, and he was like, let's just write songs. It'll be fun. We just literally hang out in his bedroom, smoke cigarettes and drink whiskey and write songs for like 8 hours. And then we eventually got so many songs together. Like, man, you know, maybe we should just do like one show. So we, you know, got some other members, did a show, did a second show. Next thing we knew, we were performing in Hollywood pretty regularly. We ended up signing a deal with a relatively small label, but they had a ton of money. They were called 2K Sounds, and they were actually a subsidiary of Virgin Records. So we ended up signing a deal with them, put out two albums, toured the country a couple of times.
Really?
You know, played a bunch of big shows.
Oh, so you were a rock star.
Well,
I knew Rockstar's you had a band. Work. I didn't know you went on tours.
Yeah. Rockstar is definitely a big word.
You
but
can
I mean,
find them on YouTube, right? If you,
yeah, and the albums are still on iTunes and all those other places you can buy music these
you
days.
You were the lead singer?
Guitar right. player.
Oh, you're the guitar player. Okay.
Yeah.
The bass or electric?
Rhythm guitar. So okay. I did some lead stuff.
So what kind of, were you guys kind of a Guns N' Roses hard rocker sort of band or?
Yeah, we were definitely sort of from that ilk. Like that's kind of what we were in college. We had, you know, we were all a little older once we got this band together. So we kind of rolled in that like Buck Cherry sort of scene, gotcha. You know, that sort of post 80s hair metal sort of style. But it was a lot of fun. I mean, I had a great time. I always say that I think I hung up my guitar at exactly the right time, like leaving Hollywood and stopping playing because, A, I was getting older and it was getting harder and harder to do just physically, but also just like the abuse that kind of lifestyle takes on you mentally, right. Emotionally, and physically. Just like touring and being, you know, if you weren't rehearsing, you were out in Hollywood handing out flyers for your show, or you were playing shows, or you were recording, and you're just like, you know, I had a full time job at the time. My son was like 5 or something.
Okay, you're already a dad at that point. Yeah, that changes things, obviously.
Yeah.
Were you sleeved with tattoos?
What's that?
Were you sleeved with tattoos yet? Is that where you got them in your rocker?
I guess I had tattoos before that band started, but not as many. I think that sleeve is like sort of a. It's like a timeline of being in that band because I probably started getting more tattoos right around the time it started, and I haven't gotten one since it ended.
Huh.
So yeah, it was kind of around that time. I've actually wanted to get more, and it was one of my plans when I moved to Vegas because my tattoo artist is in California. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, I'm in Vegas. I can just drive down there for the weekend and get some work done. And then, you know, best laid plans. Of course, that hasn't happened. Probably won't before I leave.
How about the bandmates? Were you guys still 2 years into it getting along, or was that kind of a problem that was maybe sucking the fun out of it a little bit?
No, I mean, the core group, the other two guys who basically the only two guys I've ever really been in bands with in my whole life, we're still amazing friends. They were in my wedding. I still see them all the time, talk all the time. Okay. And we never had really any strife amongst the three of us. Now, we did go through like two bass players and two drummers. Our first bass player actually was sadly was a heroin addict and ended up committing suicide. So we replaced him, had some of your normal issues with that guy, had some issues with our drummer, but never anything like, no like crazy drama.
It wasn't like you listened to Neil Diamond for the first time on a road trip and said, boys, we're taking this all in a new direction.
No. It was mostly just things like, okay, we've been stuck in a van together for like 7 days. I don't like your face anymore.
Sure.
I'm sure if we ever got together and talked about it, like none of us could even remember maybe not even remember having an argument, but if we could even remember one, we wouldn't know what it was about. Because it was probably literally something as stupid as like, dude, why do you keep leaving your socks on my spot on the bench seat in the van? You know, like something like that.
This is my 3 feet here.
Yeah.
Yours.
Right.
So as objectively as you can be, what grade do you give yourself as a guitar player? You can compare it to your grade as a poker player if you'd like to.
I'm pretty honest about all these things in my life, and I'm not a talented guitar player. I talk about my dad a lot because my dad is this guy who like he picks up hobbies a lot, and he only sticks to the hobby for like a year or two. Yeah. By the time he's done with it, he's like really, really good at it. So he's done like everything from fishing to painting to drawing. He's doing photography now. And anything he does, he becomes an expert at. He buys all the best equipment. He studies. He spends tons of time doing it and gets really good at it. Yeah. I'm like the complete opposite. Anything I've ever done in my life, with the exception of maybe like being a dad and being an entrepreneur, I've been like mediocre at. You know, like football, no matter how hard I tried, I could never be good at it. Guitar, kind of the same thing. Like, I have friends who picked up a guitar and like 3 weeks later were really good at it. And I'm like, I had to work and like claw for like every note. It just never came naturally.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm like,
there's no like big regrets. My God, I wasted my talent. This could have been something really huge for me.
No. And I know people like there's people I know who I'm like, man, if that dude had just given it like any effort, he would have been like this amazing musician.
Yeah, they just had that natural raw talent.
Yeah, and I was just like never that dude. I was really good at being in a band and really good at like being on stage, but my guitar playing left a lot to be desired. I mean, I wasn't terrible or anything. I mean, I could play the songs we wrote.
Yeah, yeah. You were better at showman than and creating a show than you were at actually physically playing.
Yeah, which actually kind of makes sense because all my favorite guitar players were not the good guitar players. Like, you know, Guns N' Roses is a good example. Everybody loves Slash, and he's an amazing guitar player. But my favorite guitar player in Guns N' Roses was always Izzy Stradlin. And he was just the guy who stood in the back, looked badass, and like, you know, had a cigarette hanging out of his mouth and strummed his guitar. Like, those are my heroes, the Keith Richards of the world, you know?
That's cool.
What's the name of the band again, in case people want to look it up? I'm sorry.
No, no problem. We were actually called Killing Bird, which is kind of where my
that's what I thought.
That's exactly where my poker name came from.
Interesting.
Yeah, like when I started playing poker, my whole I signed into a site called Poker Room, and I was like, and they're like, oh, you need a username, and I'm like, what should my username be? And I had no intention of ever being a poker player or starting a poker site or Twitching. I obviously didn't know any of that was going to happen. So I was like, well, I'm just going to call myself Killing Bird. Because then if anybody asks me in chat, hey, what's your name mean? It's like I can promote my band. That was my only thought naming myself that. And I regret it to this day because now when you Google Killing Bird, sometimes you get stuff about the band. Sometimes you get stuff about me. Like if I could change my name, I would. But it's kind of too late to go back now, I think.
That's the same way with my email. S. Barton was taken, and S. Barton won. Was taken, and then I ended up like throwing in a T at an inopportune time just to change it, and I hit it, and I've had that email for 15 years now, and about 7% of the time, they forget the T. And I never get the damn thing. And I'm just like, I'd love to like change it and just pick, you know, Steve Barton at Yahoo or whatever. But
yeah,
I would have to undo so much crap and so many passwords.
Yeah, that's a pain in the ass.
Email, yeah. It's like,
I thought you were going to say you wanted to open a chicken farm. So you could, your email was cock lover or something like that. And you've been stuck with that for 15 years.
Pet a chicken in the basement.com. Right on. So you guys are building a house out in North Carolina. Are you going back to Raleigh?
So we're actually, the house won't be done until December. So I think, we are renting a house in a place called Aberdeen.
Oh, okay.
Which is actually about an hour south. People who golf might know where it is because it's next to, it's basically Pinehurst, Southern Pines area, where I guess there's a bunch of golf tournaments or something. I don't know anything about golf. So we needed a place to sort of crash for a while. So we found this house. It's really hard to find houses that will accept three dogs.
Oh, yeah.
So you kind of have to be flexible. So we'll be an hour from where we're actually moving, but we're just kind of looking at that as like another 2 month vacation.
Yeah.
And the description of the house said it was walking distance from a brewery. So I was like, I'm in. We're going to crash there for 2 months. And then, yeah, the house will be done around December. It's actually in Durham, North Carolina.
Okay.
It's all kind of one story, two story.
What is it?
Two story, which will be a bit of a nice change. Our old house was actually three stories.
Oh, okay.
And it was a nightmare. It's bad for me because I'm old and out of shape, and B, it's really hard on the dogs as they get older. So I'm excited to like have a little bit. Like now they used to have to walk out the back door and then go down two flights of stairs to get to the backyard. Okay. Now they can just walk right out the back door and they're in the backyard. So
perfect.
It's the little things in life, you know. When you're young, you want all the cool hip stuff. Like, you know, I always wanted a big man cave and I wanted a media room and all this stuff. And now I just want like less things to clean and easy access for the dogs to get out. I'm officially an old man.
Is that, of course, I'm the negative person who always thinks of worst case scenarios. So I'm thinking like working on a house getting built and a bunch of asshole, incompetent assholes shaking me down for money and trying to do it as bad as possible. And, we need this for supplies. Is that something you have to like watch vigilantly while the house is getting built, or are you pretty much?
It's a good question. I've owned two houses and they've always been, you know, just done. Like you just say, I'll give you this much money and you give me the house. So this is the first time we've done this, but I believe, we have an agreed upon purchase price that we have like taken a loan out for and all this stuff. I don't think there can be any added costs unless we add something. So if we were to say, we really want, I don't know, hardwood floors instead of that kind of floor or whatever, then maybe the costs get higher. But I believe we're in the clear. But okay. I do expect that there'll be plenty of like they say it's going to be done December 15th or so, but I just kind of know that like,
I think the term is like front loading. Well, they'll do a lot of work early to make it look like they're really industrious.
Right.
And then maybe they move their team to another place and, we can get this done in the spring and kind of come up with bullshit reasons. That might be the bigger frustration. I mean, you'll probably just get a decent crew that'll do it timely and get exactly what you want. But
yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. But I'm definitely prepared for the possibility that we need to find another place to live in for a while we wait for it to get done in like January or February.
Yeah.
Was there any, in terms of blueprints for the house, was there any, like the wife wanted a big kitchen and you like, no, let's just get, you know, I want a hot tub instead. Like what you do with that last 10% of money, you know what I mean?
Yeah, not really. The only thing we really changed from what they had kind of already planned for the house was that in the room that will be my office was going to be carpeted. And I said, no, I want the hardwood floors in there too, because I'm really tired of rolling my chair around on I have like one of those plastic floor mats, but it's on carpet. So you kind of sink in and then you can't move your chair. I want to be able to roll around my entire office in my chair. Right. So I said, yes, hardwood floors. But if I remember it, that's the only thing we really changed that I can recall.
Well, it'd be good during a Twitch stream if you're like timing out with Aces when you go to the bathroom and we can hear you running across the floor. Thumping wood sound will add to the comedic value, I think.
Yeah. I am excited to have my own bathroom back. So my office has its own bathroom in it, which I had in my old house, but I don't have in this house we're renting in Vegas. And it seems like a simple thing, but man, it'll be so nice to have back. Because just like, I mean, the simple act of having to go through a door and then walk, you know, walk through the living room and then get to a bathroom is just a nightmare when you only have 5 minutes to kill. So I'm actually really excited about that.
Good.
Are you already back in your place in the Carolina, or are you still in Vegas?
We're in Vegas right now. Yeah, we'll be here for two or three more months.
Yeah. WSOP online series coming at the end of this
month. You know, I just
I'll be looking for a place to crash. Funny,
I just saw something about that, and I have no idea what the schedule is or what the buy-ins are or anything, but I got to I have to make some plans to play that,
because that's man, this is the cool. I mean, I told myself, A, I'm done with Vegas, never going back there again until at least I have like a couple hundred thousand in the bank or something. And B, I'm taking time off from online poker, but that's just so juicy there. Yeah, this, I think it's like September 18th through the 30th, so the end of this month. And, you know, they got a bunch of, it's like a regular WSOP circuit thing. They got a bunch of ring, they're all ring
events. That's awesome. Yeah, I need to look at that schedule. I would totally, I actually have had a few people hit me up about coming and crashing, and I would totally let you, of course. I would let pretty much anybody. But the problem is, this house is a two-bedroom house, and the guest room is my office. And then we have the master
bedroom. Don't worry,
bedroom.
We'll make it work. Like, I can't be discouraged.
I actually just had somebody hit me up about staying for a weekend coming up, and I was like, "Oh man, you know, I don't know. Like, if I Twitch stream till 4 a.m, that's your bedroom, like, blah blah blah." But now it looks like my wife might be out of town that weekend, so
right,
it might actually work.
Don't worry, buddy. I got it. Steve wanted to come. Steve wanted to come visit, and I just gave him an address in Mexico. You know what I mean? Like, some people you just don't want to hang out with. So I understand.
The garage might be cool by then, though. It'll be almost fall by then.
Okay. Yeah, I'm excited for that. I think I'm going to come at least for the weekend of the main event. I think it's like a $550 buy-in with the, I forget, $500,000 guarantee or something. You know, it'll probably kill it.
Yeah, I'm going to try to play this. I have been having a really frustrating WSOP issue, which has been driving me crazy, which is that whenever I start playing, like, I log in, I fire up my tournaments, I'm 2 hours in, and then all of a sudden I'll get the error message saying, you are not in Nevada. You cannot play at this site from outside the state or whatever. I'm like, I'm still sitting in the exact same place I was sitting when I registered 2 hours ago. And like, it's one time it took me like an hour to get back on, and they keep saying like, oh, you know, restart your router.
Right. I don't know if I could deal with that. Yeah. Me and Carlos were playing the 1K online event, you know, pretty big buy-in a couple of years ago in my hotel room, and his went out and my didn't. And this was like a couple hours in, you know, he had an average stack, and I would have been going absolutely fucking ape shit. I would have been like in, through my mind deciding who am I going to assault first from the WSOP team,
right?
In the Rio, I gotta say Carlos is, you know, he's like seen it all. I gotta give him credit. I was impressed by his stoic resolve there. I think it took about 15-20 minutes and he was back up. But I mean, especially in a goddamn
in a 1K
with some equity on the line.
Yeah, it's definitely it's funny too, because I've played on WSOP the last, you know, 2 or 3 years or whatever, and it never once happened to me in my old house. But apparently it has something to do with the way they now like geolocate you. I guess they used to do it just through your cell phone, but now they actually do it through your IP address. But I don't know enough about computers to know the reason why or whatever, but I've essentially like, I don't think I've played on WSOP.com in like a month for that exact reason, because I can't, if, you know, whenever I'm playing poker, I'm streaming. So I can't shut down my computer and restart my router and restart my computer, wait 20 minutes for it to start back up. Because not only am I like losing equity in the tournament, but I'm like, it's pretty lame ass Twitch stream. You know?
Like, right.
So, it's pretty boring just staring at a blank screen for 20 minutes waiting for you to come back up.
Yeah. Luckily, you know, the OSS series has been running for, I don't know, 6 weeks or whatever. So that's kept me pretty, like, basically, if you just played those, it was enough. So I pretty much just focused on those.
Speaking of that, I was surprised. I don't think this is a criticism that you played the $2,000 buy-in. Maybe cash the $2,000 buy-in $1 million tournament. Did you sell pieces of yourself, or did you win a Saudi? How'd you get into that? And how'd you?
Yeah, I would have never bought in direct. I mean, so I think I'm pretty open on my stream about the fact that I'm backed, so that's no big secret. If my backers had said, we want you to play the 2K, of course I would have. Yeah. But they would never say that, and I would never ask them to play it. So I had satellited in for, I think it was, I can't remember if it was 215 or 265, one of the two.
Nice.
And there was actually a part of me that was like, maybe I should unreg, but I guess you can't. Like once you settle it in, you're in, or so I was told. And then I was like, well, what the hell? I bought, you know, I got in for $2,000 or for $200. Like, it's no big deal. I'll just grind it out. And it'll be a cool experience. It'll be good for the Twitch stream. Like honestly, like the $200 I spent on the satellite, like that, it's kind of worth that much in Twitch equity.
Yeah, sure.
But you know, like you're gonna get that many. Because I think by the end I had maybe 400 or 500 viewers, which is probably,
wow,
you know, 5x what I normally get.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, it was cool. But it was tough. Like I kept looking people up, and it was just like, everybody that was at my table, like their average buy-in on ACR was like $400, $500, which means they only play the big series that would come around, yeah. And they don't even play the small buy-in of those series. Like they play the 265s and the 1Ks and the 2Ks. And I was like, all right, this is not going to, and they're, you know, they're all Euros and stuff like
sure.
that. I'm like, this is going to be a nightmare. And it was tough, but I just essentially played pretty ABC poker. And probably over, I mean, I'm a nit anyway, but I was probably overly nitty in some spots. I actually have a couple hands that, I brought.
Oh, okay. Nice. Terrific.
So, and they're actually from that exact tournament. So,
where'd you end up finishing in that tournament? You went, made the money and.
Yeah, made the money. And then I lost a massive pot with, aces versus eights all in pre. That's my only bad beat story for the podcast, I promise. But that would have put me, I think it was second or third in chips.
Oof.
We were in the money, and then that left me with 20 big blinds, and kind of got shorter, and then late position opened. I shoved sixes for like, I don't know, 14, 15 bigs or something.
Standard.
He had, I think, tens or something. We lost. So, so we ended up finishing 38th for like $5,000.
Nice. Out of how many people?
I forget how many runners there were.
500.
Well, it must have been about 500 because it just beat the guarantee. I think it got like $1,022,000 or something. Okay. So it must have been around 500 runners.
Okay. Nice.
Very nice, sir. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it was fun.
Doesn't mean your backer's now going to fly you to Monaco to play the EPT or anything.
No, but he's flying me to San Francisco this weekend to hang out and watch the first week of the football. Well, he's not. I paid for the flight, so actually,
I know someone at San Francisco.
Yes, we'll be hanging out this weekend, drinking beers.
Little and rascal. Football. Okay, that should be fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I haven't seen him because he didn't come out this summer, so I haven't seen him in a year. So looking forward to it.
Yeah, I haven't either because he didn't make it out. But, cool.
Should we jump into a couple hands or
sure? Yeah,
let's jump into some strat here.
I like it. Yeah, I actually I think I take 16 hands in this tournament, which I'm actually planning to turn into a TPE series. I think I'm gonna have Ben and Mark go through it with me. Basically, the 16 hands that I thought were interesting.
Okay.
So I picked two of those.
Okay. I was going to say, I don't have time for 16.
I basically took two that I thought were semi-interesting and that you guys could probably make fun of me for. So, I'll say, yeah. So let's jump into it. So from a table standpoint, you can pretty much assume that everybody at the table is pretty good. Obviously, there were a couple of spots that I think I realized maybe later than I should have, that they were kind of on the spewier side. But for the most part, everybody was just good and solid. So this is the $2,000 buy-in, $1 million guarantee. This is early in the tournament, and we're at 30-60. And we started with $10,000 in chips. I have just over starting stack at about $10,700. So it folds around to me in the cutoff. I have Queen-9 offsuit. And Mark has been beating into my head that I need to be opening more from late position. There's a time in my career where I would just fold at this hand and just been like, okay, on to the next one. Queen-9 off against good players, blah, blah, blah. But I do open to 155.
Okay.
And the button calls and the big blind calls. So we go to a flop with 495 in the pot. And I have Queen-9 offsuit. And the flop is 389 with two clubs.
3, 8, 9.
So, you know, good flop for us. Pretty standard big blind checks. I decide to C bet. I bet 225 into 495. The button calls and the big blonde makes it 840. So I have numbers on the big blind, but I think these were for the whole tournament. So I don't know what his numbers were running earlier, like when this hand happened, but over the whole sample I have on him, he's running 20-18 with a 4% three bet.
Okay, so the big blind, he checked, you bet, what was your bet amount?
I bet 225 and the 495.
225 and the 495.
The button. I'm sorry, the flop was what, 9-9-6-2?
9-8-3 with two clubs, and we have no club. We have spades, nine of hearts.
Okay, so we start this hand with almost 200 big blinds.
Yeah, we're super deep.
Okay.
So what do we think here, Steve? What's his range button look call. Like here? He's got a lot of – he's got –
big blind makes
two pairs. He's got, I guess he does have sets in his range, and he's got a shitload of draws, right?
Yeah. He makes it
840.
Man, we do not have a club. Well, I think Mark would almost like that we don't have a club because that puts more of them in his range. Which ones are clubs? Is it 8-9 or is it like 9?
The 8-3.
Okay, 8-3 club. That's better.
And it's important too, I guess, to note that the button called as well.
Yeah,
that's the problem. I don't think he's on a two club board. I doubt he's ever just flatting with a set, hoping, you know, the blind makes a move. He's probably raising him out, but so I don't think you're getting back raised that often if you call here. If that's a concern. But if you flat and he flats too, then there's really a lot of turn cards you don't like. If one's got a straight draw and one's got a flush draw.
Right.
You know, I might be, we've kind of talked about this too with KB. You're like, well, if this was the main event,
right.
You know, those spots where like here, you're not rebuying, you know, I don't know if it's the proper play, but I'd be just early stages. I don't think I like flat. I think I like a pretty significant raise saying like, I've got an overpair, I'm going with it. I don't know if that's proper or not, or just folding.
Yeah, right. That's exactly what I was thinking. My first option I think is folding, then raising, and then flatting.
But you calling here is very strong. So I don't know how often you have to worry about just getting barreled off with him having a crap hand. It looks like when you call, you got like an overpair. So yeah. I don't know. I'll let you guys talk.
Yeah. So my thoughts in this spot were that if I flat, I do look pretty strong, but maybe strong in a way that's trying to like pot control a little bit here. So I could have like aces, kings, queens kind of hands, but I'm not like trying to get in 200 big blinds with it. And I think we're going to find out a lot on the turn because assuming the button folds, then if the villain barrels, you know, big or whatever, we can make a decision now to possibly fold. Or he might shut down. Or if maybe, let's say, a club comes, might slow him down, and we can kind of just check back and play some pot control that way. Or if the button comes along and he barrels again on the turn, now he's double barreling it at two people.
Sure, then he's real strong.
Yeah, and then it's like, okay, now what do we really beat? But I have to say, like, in the moment, I can recall leaning heavily towards folding.
Okay.
Mainly just, to, you know, for the sake, okay, you know, we put in, like, 155 pre and 225 on the flop. Like, we've really invested nothing in this hand. We still have over 10K, which is over starting stack. Like, we can just move on, find better spots.
What you mentioned that you'd be flatting aces and kings here. Is that... Or you said you could be flatting aces or kings here, but I can't picture you flatting here with aces or kings. Is that are those really in your range, or is that what you're hoping they think?
Well, if you re-raise, call it off with aces and kings, you're going to be behind a lot.
Yeah,
you're either going to have two pair or a set, or some sort of combo draw where you're basically flipping. You've got queen ten of clubs or something.
Yeah, it would depend a little bit on if I had those hands with a club.
Okay.
But yeah, like I don't know if I'm looking to get 200 big blinds in with an overpair.
Oh no! I guess
facing this kind of action.
Like you re-raise with aces, and then if he shoves, then you got to fold.
Right. Yeah. Or we could, you know, we could raise his flop bet and then check back some turns if he checks the turn.
Or just like, you know, maybe just, yeah, just flat and let him barrel off.
Yeah.
I mean, you might have to, even if he, yeah, let him, or flat and pretty much if the button folds, you're probably going to be calling most turns other than probably a big club, like the ace or king of clubs.
Mm-hmm.
Would be a bad turn card for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can always go on. Anyway.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting spot. I did end up deciding to call.
Okay.
And I don't know if I like it. I think I agree with both of you that I think I prefer probably raising or folding.
I'm on team call now.
Yeah.
I'm changing my mind around. I think that's the proper move. But yeah, I don't know.
It definitely could be. So we do call. The button folds.
Oh, that's nice.
Okay. So now there's 2,400 in the pot.
Okay.
The turn is the king of diamonds. So now we have the 3-8 of clubs, 9 of spades, king of diamonds on the board. And he leads out for 1,800 in the 2,400.
I don't know. See, on this site, especially with the bigger buy-ins, these are always the spot in the flop. It's like, you know, there's so many like GTO guys who are just going to, you can, like you say to yourself, well, it's only 600 more, but they can put you to the test for your stack.
Right.
You know what I mean? Which is almost, if you call here, would that be 3,600, 5,000 in the pot? Yeah, not quite your stack. So yeah, this is the spots you get in. Jeez. Of course, you block top set.
Yeah,
but with the flush draw out there, he definitely would probably not be slow playing a set. So we can't take deuces and eights out of his range, right?
True.
Threes and eights.
And I think he can still barrel this card with some like combo draws, you know, like jack ten of clubs, queen ten of clubs. I think he can still barrel those because now he's picked up even a little bit more equity. And I wasn't like this hand is weird for a lot of reasons, and I'm really excited to talk it through with you guys, but also to get some feedback from my coaches, because I think I played this hand unlike I would almost ever play a hand, and really unlike I would play a hand in a 2K. Because I'm a little shocked that I didn't fold the flop, and I'm super shocked that I don't fold the turn.
What do you click it back here, or do you just call?
I just called.
So you bet 1,800. You called 1,800.
Yep.
Okay. What? How much is on the turn?
So now there's 6,000 in the pot.
6K. Yeah.
Do you think the turn sizing is? I guess he'd probably be betting his whole range that way. Like if he had a set, would be more likely to bet. I don't know, 1,400 to maybe keep you around a little bit, even. But I guess with the flush draw and the straight draw, he would probably be betting. I'm just trying to think if the pretty large bet sizing was a factor at all.
I think when I call his check raise on the flop, I think he knows I have a pretty good hand, whether it be a big draw, whether it be, I think it's at least top pair. So I think, so if he has a flush, you know, let's say he has the nut flush draw or he has the nut straight draw or whatever, I think he knows I have a hand I can call another big bet with.
Okay.
Just because I don't, I mean, the weak stuff that I have that I'm gonna bet on the flop, I think I would just fold to his check raise. So if I had, you know, if I had like 4 or 5 of clubs or something, I might just fold.
What do you do if? Well, so you're interpreting his range is stronger here now, which makes you calling a little worse, I think.
Right? Yeah, I think so.
Understanding what you're saying.
Yeah, I think like so that's why I kind of think this hand is interesting, because I actually think my call is not very good on the turn. Well,
if you're ranging that way, if you don't think, I mean, we didn't bring up the possibility that he has absolute jack shit, that he's got a very low equity hand, that he just decided he was going to play range v range. And well, you know, I'm the only one who could have two pair in this hand.
Right.
Which isn't really true. Yeah, no, this is a very interesting spot. I think, I think I'd be leaning towards a call. Now the question is, if he checks to you on the river on the club, I was just thinking about this. This is something I would do in a cash game,
mm-hmm.
In a $2,000 tournament, probably not. where like I've got a weak pair, and then they checked me on the river with the club, and like at a 2-5 game with a flush, they're never, when they get there, they're never being tricky on the river.
Right.
They're scared.
Yeah.
Of course they could be scared and call you, I guess. I don't know. But I wonder if a club were to come, I don't know if this was part of your thinking that on some cards you might bluff on the river, turn it into a bluff. Was that?
Yeah. I don't think it was in my thought process. I think that's something I would do. And I'm not one of those people who thinks you should play 2K is different than $10 buy-ins.
Okay.
but I do. I do play them differently. You know what I mean? Like you said, I'm not rebuying in this.
Sure.
I'm assuming I'm up against better opponents, et cetera, et cetera. So okay. I don't think I would turn my nine into a bluff if a club came on the river. Maybe if it was the queen of clubs, or I guess maybe the nine of clubs too, which gives me trips. Then maybe I can make a bet and actually fold, like bet like 2,200 and fold or something.
I'm curious now. I mean, not of course, especially when you're playing, you know, you've got 10 seconds to act though, but if we can step back here and now that we know you're calling, which river bets are you calling and which are you which cards are you calling and which are you folding to? Or depending on the bet sizing, might you just call bullshit and call with pretty much 80% of the time plus?
I think I'm hoping for two things. Either to...
Well, he checks on the river, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I'm basically hoping for him to check the river or to improve my hand.
Spike the five outer here.
Yeah, either two pairs or trips. I think if he bets again, almost any amount, and my hand hasn't improved, I think I'd probably then just find the fold. I mean, if he bets like 1,200 into 6K or something, I might call. But if he bets anything like 2,200 plus, I'm probably just going to be like, all right, I probably should have folded two bets ago. Here you go. my chips.
Yeah. I'm on team fold on this one. We're beating like Jack 10, we're beating Queen 10, we're beating the club draws, but he just called in the big blind. He could have a set of threes, set of eights, set of nines. I think we can take all the big pairs out of his range.
He's got a lot of flush draws though. Yeah, true. With the big blind defense.
There is
where he, you know, there's only so many sets he can have here. He's got pretty much, if we take there's only one set of nines, obviously, and then the threes and the eights. So he's only got seven combinations of sets and the two pairs. And I think there's more draw combinations, probably from if you wanted to break it down that way. But the question is, would he be triple barreling those draw combinations to a guy who's got an obviously pretty strong hand?
Yeah.
From his perspective, you've got an overpair all the time, or he's putting you on a draw if he obviously has one of those two pair plus hands.
Right.
But, I'm very curious how this hand ends here.
Cool. So like I said, there's 6K in the pot. So we go to the river, and the river is the queen of diamonds.
You're right.
So 10 Jack gets there, but we make two pair. It's one of those cards. I can remember in my mind when the Queen of Diamonds came off, I was like, yes. And I was like, oh, but wait, no. Like, I wasn't sure if that was a good card or not, you know?
It's still Queen kind of a bluff catcher now at this point if he bombs it.
Yeah.
Because he's repping a pretty – that he either got there with the straight or that he's got a set.
Right.
So we got Queen 9 off, and the final board is King Queen 9-8-3. Two clubs. The club missed. What was the nine? Was it a diamond as well?
Spade.
Oh, it's a spade. So there wasn't.
No flush came in.
Okay.
And our villain shoves for 7.2K into 6K.
Jeez. I mean, I don't know if I could fold here. You said you were hoping to improve.
And we improved, we think.
I mean, we didn't even think about that when you said you're hoping to hit a five outer. You know, one of those outs could be stepping into the nuts there.
Right. And that's why, like, if, you know, in all those hands we're putting him on, like, you know, yes, he can have sets and he can have flush draws, but 10 Jack, I think, is a pretty strong part of that potential range as well. So on the turn, in hindsight, I was probably thinking, damn, I didn't really consider the fact that one of the ways I can improve improves part of his range. And if I had thought of that, I think I would have folded to the 1800 bet.
Right. Well, calling on the turn, if you're putting him on a really value heavy range is a mistake anyways. If you're looking to improve for that sort of price.
Yeah.
And if you're putting him on the value range, then he's got a few hands where you're actually drawing dead.
Yep.
But so I don't know. I see, here's where if you had all the shark scope guys, like if his average buy-in is more than like 200, if this is like a euro, I don't know if this should be a factor or not, that pretty much you can tell just steps into ACR just once a week just to play the $200 plus tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
Like average buy-in $300 or more, that I'm like, okay, this fucking asshole's got to rebuy money.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So you look strong but capped when you call the turn. Like if you somehow had a king, you would probably raise right there.
Yeah.
So like, unless you have exactly pocket queens, you're at the top of your range is what I'm saying, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So hard to fold the top of your range.
Yeah.
Is the way, I mean, I'm a fucking, you know, I'm a donk, but I don't think I can fold here. I'm guessing you make the hero fold and then you make a deep run in the tournament and then you know that for sure you made the proper fold.
So I'm excited to play the game of what would KB do on every street with Mark and Ben, because I think they would say that I will fold every street.
Yeah, that's what I would have said.
And unless they hear this podcast, I think they'll say that. I decide to call.
Okay.
Wow.
And he shows us the Jack 9 of clubs.
Okay.
And we ship the nice early double up. I mean, in high, like now, you know, when I saw the hand, I was like, oh, okay, now everything he did makes sense. Yeah. You know? Yeah. And I later found out that this guy is actually like a cash game crusher.
Sure.
Like he's always on that beast leaderboard or whatever it's called, that I don't know what it means because it's a cash game thing. I don't play cash, but apparently it means you play a lot of cash games, which makes this hand make even more sense from his standpoint. And also would have, if I'd known that in the time, I think would have led me more to calling on the river faster.
I think you got to call the river because I think it's just probably kind of like I said, it's a poker pro.
Yeah.
Who's going to put you on one pair and think you just can't call there for $2,000. I think that is kind of funny. I'm thinking of a line from a movie. This is a Gene Hackman movie. Anyway, it's a heist movie. He's like, well, how'd you figure that out? He's like, I just think of someone smarter than me and I try to do what they do. In poker, at this point, we should like take ownership of our decisions, but it's always like, I think your call on the turn is just bad for your level of thinking, where you're like, I hope I hit two pair here. That just doesn't make a lot of sense. So if that's where you're putting him on. But, I mean, I think rationally you could put him on a lot of bluffs, or I guess, I mean, a club draw is not a bluff there for him on the turn. Like you say, he's probably picked up equity, or he's already got a, you know, made hand. But, I like the call in the river. I thought you were going to fold for sure.
Yeah.
But I think you have to. Like I said, from his perspective, how he's ranging you, this is like you're at the top of your range here. You're kind of forced to call.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think he played his hand really well, and I, especially if he looked up my shark scope and saw my average buy, and he was like, oh man, this guy sat it in. I can get him to fold, like, I can get him to fold aces here. He's probably not going to fold, like, kings or queens, but he'll fold aces.
Was this, I brought this up with Carlos, like, how twitching affects your game. Was this before you started twitching this hand?
No, this was on stream, which I think
Was this a long tank where you were, like, apologizing kind of to people, like?
I definitely tanked a long time. In fact, I remember thinking to myself, man, if I win this hand and I have chips and I make any kind of run, I'm going to have no time bank left. Like, I think I ran it down to like 17 seconds or something.
Wow, okay.
I was a little bit frustrated about the fact that I used my whole time bank, but I was pretty happy to have 20K in chips. Man. Yeah. But you know, it's kind of interesting. It's one of those spots where you're like, where you call and you win, but you still kind of feel like you made a bad call. If that makes any sense, you know, you're like, well, yeah, I was right, but am I going to be, you know, how often am I going to be right in that spot? If I do that 100 times, am I losing money?
Am I beating most of those or not?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, here's where, like I said, the more meticulous poker students than the three of us would have a very mathematical approach to this. So what are the number of hand combinations on the flop? He's doing this, the turn, the river, and then the end, you know, how many are you left with? And even though it's an overshove, of course, you still have to be right less than 50% of the time, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, you got to put 7K in to win, you know, a 20K pot.
Right.
So you only got to be right 36% of the time, probably, yeah, here. 40%,
yeah. Which might be right about the right amount. Like, that might be, I might be getting just the right price, you know?
Yeah. I'm curious. Yeah, like I said, I think he played it properly.
I'm wondering if he shoves every river. Like, is there a river that he just, like, does he shut down if an ace comes on the river?
A king would be a real bad card for him. Because if I'm him, I put you on a pair. An over pair, tens plus.
Yeah.
So if the board pairs on the river, that's even harder for him. The fact that the straight got there. I mean, of course, you could have 10 jack too.
Yeah. Sure.
But I don't know. I think, again, it's just from his possession. It's just when you don't raise the flop or the turn, you do not have it better than a pair.
Right.
And he obviously blocks pretty hard the straight and the flush draws that you could have.
Yeah,
that's a jack. Really good point. He blocks the jack 10.
Yeah.
So more likely your range is much more likely pairs. Mm-hmm. And it's just hard to call a shove on a river, you know, in a $2,000 tournament with one pair.
Yeah, yep. Your hand looks like one pair all the way up until to the river.
Yeah.
And I like his shove there on the river. I really do.
I really liked it after I called.
Maybe I would hitting the two pair. I don't know. I that might just be the crying call where you're like looking away from the computer, holding your hand over your eyes, and then hit click.
I do remember saying to myself, "Well, if I'm wrong, I have 12 bigs at 36." I'm like,
the funny thing is, your tank was not even probably thinking at all. Like, oh, do I want to be out of the tournament? No, it'd be nice if I win the hand. Oh, jeez. Yeah. It wasn't even like, man, I wonder if this, you know, how often he's bluffing here. It was just,
yeah.
Do I have?
I did the math right now, Mike. You were almost spot on. It was 35.3%. So, yeah.
I just think when you got two pair, you're good. That, I mean, it's like I said, it's a $2,000 tournament, which is probably
even more
the biggest buy-in you've ever had for sure online. I mean, they just don't have them that big, you know. So, Nice job, sir.
I know. Okay.
Thank you. Yep. So we got that nice little double up. And not too much later, we play another, what I think was an interesting hand. So we're now at 6120. Okay. Oh, wait. Oh, shoot. I'm sorry. This hand is from a different tournament.
Okay. All right.
This is the other $1 million guaranteed.
I thought you were going to apologize for lying about the last hand. No, I folded. I have no idea what he had.
I made that hand completely up, guys. Sorry. Wow, I really thought this hand was from the same tournament. And as soon as I saw my stack, I realized it wasn't. But that's okay. I still think it's interesting. So this is in the I guess it was a 265 million. That ran...
Same day, right?
It actually ran the week before.
Oh, okay.
Or the Sunday before. So we're at 6120. I have 12.2K, so a little over starting stack. And we have pocket eights in the big blind. Mm-hmm. The hijack makes it 300. And it folds to us, and we call.
Okay,
what's the hijack stack? He has exactly starting stack. So it's possible he just sat down. He has exactly 10K.
Okay. And we got 12-2, so the effective stacks are 10K.
Yeah. And I think we could 3-bet here sometimes. In fact, I probably would from the button, but I kind of like just flatting from the big blind. Are you guys pretty much on board with that?
Yeah. I mean, when you're this deep.
Yeah, you got 80 bigs.
Probably.
Yeah. It's 80... five big blinds effective, I guess.
Yeah.
So we do just call, and the flop comes 8-ace-4 with two spades.
And which ones are the spades?
The ace and the four.
Okay.
And we do have the eight of spades, just in case that becomes important. I actually don't remember if it does in this hand, but so we flop the set. And I love flopping sets with an ace on board because that's always fun. So there's 660 in the pot, and we opt to check.
Oh.
Just kind of maybe too standard, but like the standard check to the raiser. His c-bet percentage is 76%, so I'm assuming he's just going to c-bet a ton of the time.
Yeah, for sure. Checking.
How many hands do you have on him?
Looks like 23 hands, which probably means we left this table pretty quickly. Okay. So yeah, not a lot of hands actually. Now that I think about it,
that percentage could just be.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, it is. It's 2 out of 3 hands.
Yeah.
I think I'm probably checking against a rant. I like if I had zero hands, then I'm probably still checking myself.
You're arguing for a lead here, Steve?
Yeah.
Why?
Target the ace. Get him.
The ace. He's going to bet anyways. You don't want him to fold the king jack here. You want to get at least one bet out of him, which he would probably see bet.
And he's going to have. I mean, he's going to have like 6-7. He's going to have eight nine. He's got maybe not 8-9 because we block. But I mean, his range is pretty wide here from the hijack. I would think. Tons of small.
If we could see his hand face up and he had ace king, then I like leading.
Yeah.
Bet. Because. Yeah, if you check call, he's going to pot control in certain hands on the turn.
Yeah, I think he's c-betting all his aces, but he's also c-betting all of his air. So I would just rather there might be some things he might check like 4 or 5 or something. Mm-hmm. But I just think he's going to c-bet so frequently that we might as well give him a little chance to put some chips in there for when he does have the, like you said, the king jacks.
Yeah, stuff. If you have. If you're a player who donks a lot and you got a big history and you think this is a guy who knows that, then you obviously have to balance with some nutty hands here.
Sure.
And just hope he has an ace and you're getting some action or he feels like bluffing at you.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely on team check here like you are.
Okay. Cool. So if we check here and he c-bets, are we raising him or is there a plan just to call and then check the turn as well? Or
my mind was to go for the check raise.
Let's see what he does here, Steve.
Okay. All right.
So he bets 225 into 660.
Okay.
And we make it 775.
Yeah, I think I'm check raising because A, there's a flush out there and the flush draw, so we could put you on. And B, you're just probably not getting any chips out of him if he doesn't have an ace anyways.
So right.
You're trying to hope he has an ace here and get some chips in the pot.
Okay. I guess I can get on board with that. We get an extra 2 big blinds here by checking the flop instead of leading when he's got, like you said, the king queen, the king 10, all that.
Yeah, and I think we can also look like we have flush draws sometimes, so he might even peel our raise with kings, queens, jacks.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, at least one, you know, and they might not call a turn, but I think
right.
I think he's going to call enough, and he's going to call most of his aces. So, we do the check raise. He does call. So now there is 2,200 in the pot, and the turn is the king of spades. So now it's 8-ace-4-king-3-spades. We have the 8 of spades. So now, yeah, I remember now. This actually does somewhat play into the hand.
Okay.
And we're first act. So there's 2,200 in. I remember this card and being like, okay, it's not the worst card in the world, but it's definitely not the card we wanted to see. Cause we did say that if he had something like kings, he would probably peel us one to see if we're going to,
well, I'm not sure how often he's see betting kings.
Fair point,
but maybe he is just okay. Let's find out where we're at kind of thing.
Yeah.
From his spot there,
but yeah, I don't know if he's calling a check raise with kings,
probably let him go, but.
Yeah, you might be right about that on the king.
I'm not too unhappy with this card. First of all, well, again, it's hard pre-ante or when you're this deep, it's hard to count like pre-flop combos. Because, again, he could just be opening it, and you don't have a lot of hands at him. So he could just have a shitload of spade combos coming from that position from the hijack.
Yeah.
So, you know, normally if someone opens and you're like trying to put him on a tight range and like, you're like, well, he only has 10, 9, jack, queen, that, you know, like you're putting him on like 10, 12 combinations, but he could have more than that. But I think you have to, I'm still willing to play for stacks here. I think maybe that's a bad mentality, but, I don't know, Steve, what are you thinking? Are you betting here, maybe a little on the smaller side so you can just call the raise if it comes and then evaluate river?
I don't know. I was thinking of...
Or are we controlling the pot by checking here?
I was thinking of check calling. And
yeah, that's not horrible.
You know?
Maybe that's the play. What would the smart person say?
I don't know. I don't know. Let's get one on the call.
Too late.
So we do go ahead and lead for 1,100. And I kind of remember thinking like, if we get raised here, this is going to be really awkward, but we're probably just going to play for it all. Cause he can also have stuff like ace queen with the queen of spades and stuff that he's
and ace king. And
Ace king that now he's trying to protect against a flush draw or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think at this point I had decided like, okay, I'm not shutting this down now.
I'm just going with it.
If the river comes something really terrible, maybe we'll change our mind, but, and I don't know what that would, I guess another spade is the worst thing we can hope for, even though we do make a flush.
I still think he's got probably more ace-x combos than spade combos, I guess, which is what, which is like the main thing I thought on the, when he calls the check raise on the flop. So just pointing that out.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
How many guys are going to then turn the ace-x into a bluff here if he raises? I don't know how often that is. So he's got a lot of flushes if he does raise here.
Yeah. I think it makes a lot of sense. So yeah, so I bet 1105 into 2210. He calls.
Okay.
Now I'm scared a little bit. The river, okay, so it's 4420 in the pot, and the river is the king of diamonds.
Oh.
He's got ace king in his range for sure. But I think isn't he raising quickly how we range him when he just calls the turn? I think he's clicking it. He's raising you there with his flushes quite a bit. Unless he's just pot controlling the baby flush. If for some reason he's got 7-6 of spades and he's worried about flush over flush.
Yeah.
But any big flush, queen high or jack high flush, I think he's going to raise there a lot. So I still have him on a very ace-x range with maybe a spade in there.
Yeah.
Ace of hearts, jack of spades, something like that.
Right.
Just throwing that out there quickly. So you boat up on the river.
Yep. And at this point, I've kind of decided, okay, if he has like a really weak ace, I don't know that we get called very often. Although I might be wrong about that.
The king, king eight, yeah.
And I also am thinking, okay, if he has complete air, if I check, I'm afraid if I check, he's going to worry that I have a flush, and now I'm worried about the boat. So he might just check back. Yeah. I kind of don't want to check, but I also don't really love betting because I fold out a bunch of stuff that I can get value from, if that makes any sense.
I think you have to bet here. Yeah. I think so. I mean, you might have to bet on the smaller side. How much is in the pot, Steve?
4420.
On the other hand, there's another part of me that just wants to bomb it here and just hope he was just playing a flush cautiously. And it's hard to fold a flush in his spot. Let's just put him on the top of like the top of his range. So like if you bomb it, he's probably getting rid of the ace X, but I think he still might call with the flush. But you know, like I said, I ranged him when he called the turn on a lot more ace X's than flushes. And he got called by an ace here. We're going to have to bet small.
Right.
Probably 1,400 or something like that is my first thought.
Yeah.
We're in the same. Which is, you know, 1,400 is 9 big blinds or something like that here, you know. But maybe we should be a little more ambitious and 2/3 to pot it. But I don't like a check, though. I don't. Yeah. What is he bluffing on the river? Or you just talk, I mean, well, if he's got the ace jack, like I thought, or ace queen, he's checking back a lot here. Maybe he goes for triple really thin value, but I don't think so. That would be bad if he were to bet an ace here. That'd be really bad.
I would agree.
I mean, all you're beaten by is pretty much ace king here. I mean, we don't think he has aces. He would probably have, might have repopped it on the flop with the flush draw out there, I think, most often. So we got the best hand, and I think we got a better hand.
Fair enough. I, in typical Killing Bird fashion, do not do the right thing.
Okay.
And I checked.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. And I don't know why. I think there's way more arguments for betting for sure than checking.
Now, were you checking hoping that you're just going to get, if he has, was your intention of check shoving or was it check calling?
I think at the time it was, my intention was to check shove.
Okay.
And I think in my mind I was like, okay, let's get him to bluff all his missed stuff. But I just don't think he has that much missed. There's just not that many missed hands.
I'm trying to think what bluffing hands would be here. The only thing I can think of is somehow he's got, I mean, I can't even really think of anything. He called with the queen jack with the queen of spades on your check raise somehow.
Right.
Like the backdoor straights and the backdoor flush. And then he picks up the straight and the flush draw on the turn. But on the river, he only has queen high. I mean, I'm literally like, that's about the only hand I can think of.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he comes up with something interesting on the river here. Or maybe you save your tournament life because he's got ace king. But,
king eight.
Yeah, I think it's a bad check. But what happens when you check to him?
By the way, I agree that I think it is a bad check. So yeah, I check. He bets 34-45 into 44-20, and we have 10K behind. So I'll give you a little bit into my mindset at the time. I go for the check raise. At least I think that was my intention, but I don't think I was expecting such a big bomb. You know, I was expecting something like 1800 or 2200. And when he goes for 3400, I'm just like, wow, does he really have aces or ace king? Like,
this ace seems king. Yeah, I might almost just, if he's bet calling here with a flush, that's pretty bad. So like, if I had a flush, I'm just trying to think how I would play. If I had a smallish flush here, I think he does have to bet it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a bet fold from his spot. And again, it's like, I think it would be, I would, for that reason, I'd be betting like 1700. So when he's bets big, it looks really polarized. Like somehow he does have some shit hand, which we can't really think of. Or he's got a boat.
But this,
I might just call, although that would be really nitty, and Mark and Ben will, Mark certainly will mock you just because he likes mocking people.
Yes.
Ben might disagree. I don't, not sure.
Yeah, I think what you said at the end is exactly what I was thinking at the time. And I think I actually remember saying this on my stream. When he bets so big, I feel like it's very polarized. So it's like aces or ace king, mm-hmm. or it's shit. And if it's shit, he's not calling when I shove. So I'm winning the same amount by shoving.
Right.
I'm winning by calling. But the times where he does have aces and ace king, it really sucks. So I might make the
nitty just call here just to, if you do shove, are you losing value? Is he calling with a flush minute time? That might be one of those where the guy's yelling at himself in front of his own Twitch stream going, why did I fucking bet so much? Now I'm all, you know.
Yeah, now I got to call because he only has 4,300 behind.
Right, yeah. I guess he's supposed to call with a flush there, maybe.
Looks like, you know.
So if we jam, there's 18K in the pot and it's 4,300 for him to call. So, you know, it's kind of one of those, it's like really, I don't know, like we could definitely be losing some value. We could also be getting value owned. If, like I said, if he had bet 2,200, if he had bet like 2,200, I would have jammed.
Yeah. See, that's what I would like to see, like you bet on the rivers, is just make a little bet and then he can jam his, the stuff that, what would he turn into a bluff there? I guess maybe.
There's just no bluffs in his range here. It feels like there shouldn't be. Unless he's just on a pure, I'm going to float this guy in
flushes. You know, like if you bet like we're saying 13, 1400, like if he's got a flush there, it looks like you're trying to value him with like an ace.
Steve, we checked. We didn't bet 1400. We're on to deciding what to do. Yeah, I mean the thing is, is he betting flushes there? I guess he is bombing flushes there.
Oh, he's got him, right? I mean, like it doesn't look like we have a flush.
Yeah, I just feel like if I had a flush here, I'd make it so much smaller. Try to get called by my ace 10 or my ace jack.
Right, that would be a painful situation on the river for you if you had the nut flush where you'd have to bet fold. I guess would be the proper play. But again, these Euros are fucking.
Yeah,
they're always putting people in tough spots. They'll shove it here with the nut blocker, King X, just knowing you do not have the nut flush. I mean, the nut boat.
Right.
This is where I level myself at a lot of the pots. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This is why it's good just to. You don't want to watch too many Daryl J's videos, frankly, because you start thinking of all the exotic ways you can, you know. Outplay a guy in position, you know.
Right. I do remember very specifically saying, I think like maybe 10 minutes after this hand happened, I remember saying something about how when you've been running bad for a while, you start to assume that they just always have. You know, you start to see monsters under the bed, I think is what I called it.
And so he does have the ace king then, I guess.
Well, let's find out.
Okay, just for the record, I'm going to ship it here on the river and hope to get values. If somehow he has a king and is just clicking buttons, then you get called by that. I think you get called by a flush.
Yeah.
And maybe even now, ace queen's probably folding. Ace queen should be folding to that. But
just for the record, I think Steve should change his email to cock lover because I think it's an easy.
So I decided to just call.
Okay.
And he shows us the 6-7 of spades, which congrats to Mike because he actually named that hand a little earlier as some potential stuff. And we find ourselves spending the next 10-15 minutes going, damn, why didn't I shove?
Yeah, I mean, if he's good, if he's real good, he's supposed to fold that river because you just don't have any bluffs. You've got a bigger flush or you've got a boat. Or you know, unless again, if you both on like ninth level poker here, you could be shoving with the ace and the queen of spades, knowing you have the blocker to the nut full house and the nut flush draw. But he's getting such a price, he might just be calling. Like fuck it, if one of those, you just look at the math real quick, and he's like, Jesus, he only has to be bluffing. 19% of the time here or something.
Right.
I'm surprised to see him bet that flush to bomb it. Because what is he expecting? What worse hand is he expecting to get called by?
Right. That's exactly my thought. When he made it so big, I'm like, wow, he actually has it.
From his spot, I think that's a bet fold from his spot. And when you bomb it, you're in such a horrible spot.
Yeah.
I think I'm in his spot. And so you kind of level yourself a little bit here that the villain just played it poorly, I think. But like I said, we kind of took some of these, or at least, yeah, I think we were on the same line where we took some of these flushes out of his range when he bombed it. It kind of looked like a full house or some sort of piece of shit,
right.
Which, you know. Yeah. But, I don't know if we played the river properly. I don't like the... it turned out to work well because he bombed it, where if you bet 1500, obviously you just call.
Right.
So you made 2000 chips by doing that.
Yeah. This is going to be one of those spots where Mark goes, well, you played it terrible, but you ended up getting the most money. Good job. He's always like, I don't know how you do it, but you play your hands as bad as possible and somehow get.
I wonder if this villain was on the level of, well, this is kind of a mergey bet. Cause now I can get him to fold a better flush.
Yeah, certainly could be. I do wonder if he's folding to my shove. I mean, because like you said, I have no bluffs.
Yeah, it's impossible to put you on a bluff there. It really is. But it's like in game when you're six tabling and you're just getting like a fucking ridiculous price and you're like, I hit my goddamn hand.
Yeah.
You maybe make a frustrated call, but when you look at it afterwards, again, the better players see everything within that very small frame of time, so they're already thinking of these things.
Right.
If I'm playing well, I can fold to your shove, certainly, if I'm that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think most pros will.
Yeah. I think, especially with reentry tournaments, you kind of always have to factor in that reentry aspect and realize that a lot of these guys are willing to fire like four bullets into the melee or more, you know? Yeah. This is kind of like you were saying earlier, this is the classic, well, if it was the main event, like if I think the main event and I shove on him on the river, I check shove on him on the river, I'm folding in his shoes.
Yeah.
But because your tournament life's so important. But in this, it's just one button away from having a starting stack.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, all the hands we were putting him through, we had the flush draws and the ace X he was getting stubborn with, obviously ace king, and we thought he'd raise with aces on the a fair amount maybe on the flop. So there's really not that many combinations of ace king and there's everything else. So that would be a good argument for shoving the river there.
Yeah.
I like just flatting the river, frankly. I don't know if it's proper, but that's what I would have done.
Well, we'll find out hopefully in the next, maybe we'll run this through PO Solver. I don't own PO Solver, but give it a try.
Yeah, I'd like that.
The funny thing is that you can kind of move up the like poker evolutionary talk. First you ask me and Steve, then you ask Carlos. Then you ask Ben. I don't know who's ahead of Ben. You know what I mean? Like, eventually you move and there's like an answer.
Right. Yeah.
like, actually, maybe you talked about it with your dog this morning. And then me and Steve are next. You know what I mean? Then the mailman. You know what I mean? Like,
first it was my wife. Honey, they called me with 7-6, honey.
Should I have shoved here? Steve, before I forgot, KB, I don't know if you listened to the last one with Steve and Carlos. It has probably the greatest two minutes in podcast history, any podcast.
Wow, I haven't listened to it, but now I need to.
Steve, it was just so bizarre. Carlos is talking about, I don't really mocking you, Steve, but it's one of those things where just two people are on such different planes. Carlos is talking about his new, wanting to be on a plant-only diet. And he's explaining, well, it's for health reasons, but it's also, for moral reasons. I saw some videos of what goes on in these slaughterhouses, and Steve's like, you're right. When I killed a deer, and he's like, it just tastes so much better, and you feel so much better afterwards. So Steve was thinking that Carlos was saying the slaughterhouses are unsanitary.
Yes.
Like, Carlos doesn't want to see hapless animals slaughtered, and Steve starts talking about slaughtering them in just a more healthy manner.
But in a slower way.
Yeah.
They die slower and more painfully. Yeah.
So then Carlos is, you can tell, doesn't want to embarrass Steve, by the way. Like, if it was me saying that, he would just jump all over and let me know that I'm an idiot for missing the point. He's like, I get it. And then Carlos gives actually Steve a second chance to get it.
Which
where
goes
he's
right
talking
over
about, he's like, I do this kind of for selfish reasons. I feel better about myself. Carlos, again, is saying he's not killing the animal. And Steve's like, you're right. He's like, you feel much more connected to the animal when you kill them yourself. And then Steve tells this story that I swear to God is like out of some sort of fucking druggy haze that someone comes up with. He's like shooting a deer and describing how this one didn't die immediately. And like, it was like struggling and standing, and Steve went up to it and said, don't worry. It's almost over. Him and the animal connected in some sort of cosmic way.
And then he drank the blood, and he put the
I don't know what to tell you about this, Steve. It was uncomfortable, and it was fascinating, and it was just bizarre, and I don't know if I'm making too much of it, but I was listening to this. I'm like, this is like these guys worked this out ahead of time somehow.
It's funny, too, because I'm thinking of all my friends in the world, and the one that would be least likely to ever take a gun and shoot an animal is Carlos.
Right.
Like, of all my friends in the world.
Right.
Not just because of the
animal. It surprised me quite a bit that he would do this and take pleasure from it. I don't. But the other hand, again, Steve, not a moral judgment. But it's funny, my buddy who owns Beyond Meat, which is like a big company in the whole, vegetarian thing.
Okay.
His argument has only been hunters should be allowed to eat animals because they know what they're doing.
Yeah. I do think there's some fairness to that argument.
Well, but, you know, that's his, like, if you just get it from a slaughterhouse, you have the hunters, you know, they're doing it for food. Yeah. And they're currently, you know, they're aware of what they're doing. So, Steve, I don't mean to, this, maybe this sounds harsh. It was more funny just because you had no idea what Carlos was talking about. It's really like literally nothing. Like, well, none of it was sinking in at all.
What it is, it's like, okay, the first time, for example, every time I go to the freezer and I pull out one of those 1 pound packets of venison, and it's tough to articulate this if you're not a hunter, and those that are listening that are hunters will understand. I feel grateful for that as I'm cooking it and when I'm eating it. And when I go to Costco and I buy a steak and I put it on the barbecue, I feel nothing other than this should taste good. Does that make sense? Like, it gives you a connection to your food that never experienced before.
It doesn't make a lick of fucking sense. It really is just, it's bizarre. Like, you actually take the venison and you think about this animal where you had this special moment and you said, okay,
yep,
it's over.
Every time
you showed some sympathy and like a common existential, you know, terror that all animals feel. I mean, it's just now like Sean, who's a loyal listener to the show. He's a hunter. Well, I'd be curious what he says. Maybe he can step in. I think he is.
Sean, write us an email, headsuppokerpodcast@gmail.com. I'd be curious if I'm just,
we literally might have to, or
if you feel the same thing too.
We literally might have to break into an asylum to find someone who understands what you're talking about.
I'm gonna be very honest. I can relate to both sides because I came from a hunting family, but I only went hunting once in my life.
Okay.
And I shot a deer with a bow.
Wow.
Well, technically with an arrow, but you get the idea. And we tracked it for 4 hours, I think. Yeah. And then we came back and we tracked it again the next day. And we never found it. And I felt so guilty.
Yeah.
Not so much. How do I explain it? I felt bad because I didn't train to be good enough at it to kill the deer. I only was trained to be good enough to injure it. And I felt terrible. But I will also say that when I go to Costco and buy a steak, I feel fantastic. Yeah. I can't wait to get home and eat.
Is this going to be? Yeah, obviously I'm a hypocrite. So I could never hunt because it would just, I just know myself. It would fill me with grief and, you know, right. But it's going to be hard for me to, although I've had no red meat for over a month now as I try to like change my diet.
Good but for you,
so I can't, but I've also nice. Had like 8,000 pounds of meat already in my life. So I can't really, no, Steve, I've heard other hunters kind of say the same thing. The connection with the animals and the nature and all that kind of, like a lot of the hunters like being in the woods.
Yeah.
You know, it's a nicer place to be than being in, and, they're very pro environment and, you know, pro animal in their own way. But, yeah, it was two people who just, yeah, you had no idea what he was, where he was going, Steve. It was pretty funny.
I really got to go, gentlemen. I'm literally driving to Mexico here in 27 minutes, and I'm standing in my boxers. So
nice. Well, dude,
okay, thanks, Steve, thanks, whatever you do, promise me this. Drink a lot of the water.
I will.
Okay, just
go for Montezuma. You guys can get Tournament Poker Edge. Sign up for some free videos. They've got over 10 hours of them. And when you sign up, use the code HUPMONTH, HUP quarter, HUP year. You can be as good at poker as Mike, Derek, and myself.
Good luck.
Thank you for
Steve,
coming
on. Why are you trolling Poker Edge, for God's sakes? They've got some of the top pros in the world there. Okay, let's just make that clear. It's not just a bunch of buffoons. Okay.
A few buffoons too, but
this was a lot of fun, Mike and Derek. Thank you guys for coming on, and thank you for tuning in. Here is your weekly motivational speech.
If I want a better life tomorrow, I need to start working on it today. Ambition is a minute-by-minute, day-by-day mentality. To have the ambition to work towards a better family life, a newer car, a bigger house, a financially secure future, you have to live it every moment. If living a successful life was easy, I'm sure more people would be successful.
If where you are is not what you saw, then what you are in is temporary.
What's your dream? The dream is the most valuable, delicate gift you could ever have given to you. And there are people out there that'll try to steal it every single day of your life. We have the ability to live a lifestyle that fits our goals and dreams. You have the ability to put together any type of lifestyle you want in your mind and have it come true. It's an ability that you have, but you need to build that dream up and watch out for the dream stealers.